Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, CEO and co-founder of Employee Cycle, Bruce Marable. And I just want to tell you all you people leaders out there, I've seen you pull those messy, crappy spreadsheets together when it's time for you to do your HR reporting. I hear your pain, we heard you, and we delivered. And that's why we built Employee Cycle, your people dashboard, so that you can connect to all your different systems through the pre-built integration connectors to be able to pull all that data into one real-time, beautiful, and centralized dashboard so that your company can have an HR source of truth and answer all your questions about the workforce from the same place. But that's enough about me and our company, because today we have a very awesome guest that's going to talk about a really interesting topic that we talk about a lot internally here at Employee Cycle. So please help me welcome to the podcast, Miranda Dekonski. She is the VP of Customer Success and People Ops at Swiftly. And today we're going to talk about what HR can learn from the customer success role. Miranda, welcome to the podcast.
Woo, Miranda!
Thank you.
Miranda!
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to talk about this topic. There is so much correlation between, you know, people success and customer success. So it's pretty relevant, I think, for everyone.
Sure. Especially with the focus of the workforce or the focus of the company right now, really shifting a lot from customers to the employees, where typically it's only focused or at least majority focused on customers. So I think you have a pretty interesting position to be in customer success and people ops and to oversee both of them. I've actually never seen anybody with that title before. So that's pretty cool.
Welcome to startup world.
Welcome to startup land. I love it. So Miranda, I want to start this off like we usually do, which is telling the audience, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, so I have been doing mostly customer-facing operations for over 20 years now. About, a little over 9 years ago, I made a shift from working for very large companies to joining startup world. In startup world, you really get your hands dirty. You touch everything, especially when you're in a seed series or series A or series B. Generally, everyone is cleaning out the refrigerator, answering the door, answering customer tickets. The CEO is, taking sales calls. So when you are in the smaller startups, you touch everything from the people ops to the customer ops. And that's kind of how I got my start. I was a COO of a really small seed series tech company where I owned the human resources side there. And it's just kind of continued to follow me from there. So yeah, it's a little unconventional, but I think after this conversation, it'll make more sense to people. I think they will see the correlation and see how a lot of practices that come from customer success are applicable on the people ops as well.
So before we dive deep into the similarities and the potential differences of HR and customer success, we all are really interested to know, how do you manage overseeing both of those? Because most of the HR and people leaders that I know don't have enough time, energy, resources, funding, budget to do their job the way they want to do, just owning people ops. So how do you do both?
Yeah, that's a really good question. First, the answer is I drink a lot of Diet Coke. caffeine equals energy equals my friend. So I do work a lot of hours. But second, I have an amazing team, both the customer success and people ops side. Specifically on the people ops side, I have, probably one of the strongest people ops leaders that I've had the pleasure to work with in my entire career. She balances out the empathy, has her eyes and ears to the ground, and understand what needs to be done daily. So that really does help take a lot of the weight off my shoulders, because all I have to do is help set her up for success and remove those, barriers or roadblocks that could be in her way. And then once I remove them, she rolls. So it really is helpful.
That's awesome. So we typically have a lot of HR and people ops leaders from tech companies or digital and very innovative companies listen to the show. But we also have a lot of people that are in more traditional, conventional industries that may not know what customer success is. So can you please give a brief description and summary of what you believe customer success to be?
Just kind of in short, customer success, I mean, when people hear it, they tend to think of customer support, right? Solving problems, waiting for that next issue to come in from a customer to get that solved and send them on their way. Customer success is actually more strategic. So most customer success managers own a portfolio of customers, and it is their responsibility to make sure those customers are getting a return on their investment, that they're achieving their goals, that they're realizing value in the product, and that you're setting them up for renewal, setting them up for increasing that lifetime value. So it's definitely more on the strategic, proactive side, less on the reactive. While there are always going to be reactive components to the role, there's always going to be firefighting. The ultimate goal is to be able to, take a step back and be strategic and proactive and be partners with your customer.
Interesting. So let's start from the top and let's talk about creating a customer success plan versus creating a people success plan. As you're thinking about both of those, where do you start on both sides? And is it from the same place?
Well, now that I think about it, it could be on the same place. So when you're creating a customer success plan, essentially what you're doing is partnering with your customer and saying, okay, dear customer, you're purchasing this product. Why are you purchasing this product? What is the friction? What are you trying to solve? What is the goal? What does success look like, right? And you're documenting that all out. You're creating a plan on how you're going to get there, thinking through the various steps, milestones, and potential barriers to success as well, and then trying to mitigate for those. On the people ops side, really, the team is the people ops team's customer, if you want to simplify it. So when you bring somebody in, even, early on is recruiting or setting up your vibe that you want the candidates to think through, or the candidates to feel, pardon me, when they look at your website or they go to your glass door or whatever it may be, there's a lot of strategy around that. And it's the correlation is so significant if you think about it. So from the people upside, you're going to think through everything from recruiting to onboarding to, what do they need internally to be set up for success? How do you think through your diversity and inclusion programs? How do you think through any, ERGs that you need, any like happy hours programs? It's very holistic because everyone has probably a different definition of success at work. Right? Some folks just want to come to work and they want to understand where their career path is. They want to understand, how do I get to the next step? Where others come in and they want to have that family environment. And, you have to set that up as well. So if you think about it in correlation to customer success, it's very similar.
It's interesting that you mentioned on the customer success side that typically a person is assigned a certain number of customers to, let's call it, own that relationship so that if anything goes wrong with those customers, if they're thinking about leaving, if they need additional services and need to upgrade, if you will, it doesn't seem like it's possible to have that one-to-one relationship on the people side, or maybe it is. Can you talk about what it would look like, or should we have more people that work on the people team? So it looks similar. So if you have 200 employees, maybe you have 10 people on the people ops team and each person kind of helps 20 people. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Now, I'm also a realist and I know that, financially, at least in, your Series A, Series B startups, that might not be possible, even though it would be really amazing. If I could set up with, let's just say that budget was not a problem. I had unlimited budget. I would definitely have a ratio of of team members per HR rep, and have, guidance around the HR side of, do check-ins, have a lunch with someone every week, or, really check in with folks. I know everyone, or not everyone, but a lot of companies send out their, quarterly employee surveys, which gives you a great pulse. But sometimes just having that one-to-one time with the employees gets you way more information and helps you build trust and rapport and helps you understand gaps. And if you have one HR representative for the company and there's 200 people, there's just no way that that is possible. In an ideal world where budget was unlimited, I would have a ratio and I would have, different groups owned by the HR rep for them to check in and just have a pulse on what's going on.
There seems to already be a parallel between the two, especially in areas like NPS, which was started on the customer side, and then the people team started to incorporate ENPS. So can you talk about the difference between the two, or if they're actually tracking the same on both sides?
Now, the way I use NPS, I do track the same. I use it the same way. It's you send out a survey. Would you promote us on a score of 0 to 10? If you are a 9 or a 10, you're a promoter. If you're a 7 or an 8, you're passive. And anything below 6, you are a detractor. And in the customer-facing world, if you have detractors, those, of course, are going to be the folks that you're going to want to really dig in on and figure out what's going on. And how can you turn that relationship around? What do they need more of? What do they need less of? Is it a product issue? Is it a relationship issue? Are there bugs that are outstanding that haven't been resolved? What is causing that detractor score? It's the same on the people ops side. If you have detractors, you really want to drill in and figure out what's going on in that team. What's going on with that individual? Are there factors that are solvable? Are there trends at the team level? So if you have multiple departments, are you seeing multiple detractors in the same department? Utilizing that information in this almost exactly the same way as I use it for, the customers.
So another area that's inherently the same is retention. I mean, on the customer success side, I'm assuming the sole purpose and essence of your role is to keep customers happy, but the important word there is to keep them. And on the HR side, I would imagine that you want to keep people as long as possible, but there is a difference between regrettable turnover and then people who you need to let go. So is there a difference there on the customer side where you really never want to let anybody go, or are there some instances where you're just like, this customer isn't a good fit, and that's also similar as well?
Oh, no, it's very similar. So on the customer side, with churn, we have preventable, we have not preventable, and then we have folks who are just bad fit customers. So those are like the three main buckets if we're doing it in correlation, right? So preventable means, we could have done something differently as a team to set them up for success. Unpreventable means that maybe they lost budget and they could no longer afford to pay for you. And bad fit really means that they probably should have never come on to begin with. They were probably a bad fit customer, bad fit for the product, which can fall under preventable, but I always carve it out into a separate bucket because there's a lot to be learned from bringing on a bad fit customer. On the people ops side, it's very similar. There is regrettable, as you said. And then there's also folks that once you start digging in, may have not been the right fit for the job. The correlation is very eerily similar if you talk about it like that.
So on the customer success side, there's always this debate whether or not the customer success team could have kept the customer. But then if they didn't keep the customer, there could be this knee-jerk reaction to just mislabel them potentially as a bad fit, because then the onus or accountability is on you to actually make them happy. And so on the people side, should you be aware of that as well? Will people just say, oh, they're just not a good fit, even though maybe it's a cover up for the entire company where you're just bad at training or bad at onboarding, but that person actually was great?
Yeah, I think that a couple of things there that you should dig into is, one, we definitely should be careful about just saying someone is a bad fit. You need to suss it out in both the qualitative and the quantitative data. So looking at previous, you know, employee NPS scores, any feedback that may have been provided either by the team member to the manager or from the manager to the team member. Also, I think it's really important that you do an exit interview with somebody that is not the direct manager of the team member, so you can really, you know, flesh out anything that could potentially be going on so it's not miscategorized. And looking at just analytics and trends across department and company to, you know, see if there is a story there. It's the same thing, though, when a customer churns, you should always do a retro, if you can, postmortem with the customer and, you know, interview them and figure out why they're leaving so you don't miscategorize the churn. It's a little bit harder with customers to get them to do that, but you'd be surprised. A lot of customers are more than willing to spend 15 minutes with you for you to learn and get better and improve as a company.
And now we've been primarily focusing on the areas where people ops and customer success are pretty similar, but are there things that you've seen at other companies or that you're currently doing at your company on the customer success team that you and other HR leaders should be doing on the people ops team as well?
Should be doing. One of the things that I think people ops leaders should look at doing is some type of business review for the team. So we do, business reviews at different cadence with our customers. Some companies do quarterly, Swiftly, depending on the size you are, you either get an annual or you'll get two business reviews a year. And essentially, it's kind of giving you the state of the state. You know, you are a customer. These are the goals that we set forth together. And this is where you are. Now, that may sound like a lot like the mid-year and annual review process, but I view the mid-year and annual review to be a conversation generally between a manager and a team member, and also just an overall check of where everybody is in regards to their performance. What I'm talking about is more of a human resources or people ops getting in front of the company once or twice a year and just giving a state of the state. Like, this is where our ENPS is. These are the things that you care about. This is what we've heard on your feedback surveys, and this is the actions that we've taken against that. These are the resource groups that we're creating. You know what I mean? Like a real state of the state. I've not seen too many companies do it. I've seen a couple, and it's so refreshing. It's like a breath of fresh air. And you know that that company really cares about the people and really cares about the overall success of everyone there.
Miranda, thank you so much for being such an awesome, awesome podcast guest. You really made me sound smart on this interview. And so can't thank you enough for that. But like I said, this is something that we think about a lot in our business in regards to the similarities between how you should be looking at the customer and the employee, especially from a data-driven way. So thank you for providing a lot of context and wisdom around this. I really appreciate you being on the show. So thanks a lot, Miranda! Woo!
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Bruce.
You know, the crowd is just going so wild for you. They were so thrilled and passionate about everything you said.
Wonderful.
So Miranda, where can people find you and your company online?
Yeah, you can just find me on LinkedIn, Miranda Dekonski. Reach out. I get a lot of messages on LinkedIn, but I try to respond to almost all of them. So please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn.
Awesome. And we'll definitely make sure to put your contact info in the show notes. So for everyone listening, if you really enjoyed this podcast episode and you learned a lot like I did, then please leave us a 5-star rating wherever you leave ratings, because that shows that we're providing great content and sharing is caring. So please do that. Also, if this is the first episode of the Employee Cycle podcast that you're listening to, because you just think Miranda is the most amazing person ever and you wanted to listen to whatever she was saying, or you thought this topic was really interesting, but you want to hear more, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And please, all of you HR and people ops leaders, please remember to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.